Let's go to Bill Mackay, who's in to talk things urban. Kia ora, Bill. How are you?
Kia ora, Susie.
Now, the concept of designing disorder.
Yeah, sounds
what
odd,
is this?
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
Really, it's about loosening up on planning rules and urban design, about so people in neighbourhoods can do their own thing. On another RNZ show, I was talking about company towns, and that's where an employer develops housing and facilities around their factory. You can think of the proposed Sleepyhead Township in Waikato. In the South Island, manufactured towns or cities, you can think Rolleston, Pegasus. Outside of Auckland, Manukau City is a 1960s, 70s new town. And we're getting more and more of these springing up around our big cities. They're fully designed, you know, they're almost like a turnkey version of a town, like a turnkey version of a house scaled up. Fully designed, nothing about them is there by accident. And the problem with all of this is, even if you employ really smart designers, is that you end up with this kind of sameness about them, a real homogeneity. If you've ever seen the film The Truman Show, what looks like a vast stage set, that's actually a 1980s purpose-built town in Florida called Seaside. Disney have got one down there called Celebration as well. It's just like being in the 1950s, really. And even in this country, new suburbs and new brownfield redevelopments, apartment buildings, retirement villages, they've all got rules and covenants and design controls that regulate what you can build and the materials, the colour, the fencing, the landscape, all of that kind of thing, even what you can have on your veranda or your porch, and of course any, you know, what businesses you can run from home. So the issue here is, this may preserve the character of the place that you're buying into, but how is it going to assist in adapting to climate change and social change and economic change and things like that? Coming through the pandemic and out the other side, we've got increasing numbers of people working from home. We also live in an era of vastly increased planning and urban design rules. And there's a thing called CEPTED, which is crime prevention through environmental design. That's like saying you can only have low shrubs to retain visibility, you know, no big trees, no big chunks of native bush, anything like that. And of course, we've got the ubiquitous health and safety everywhere. You know, you can't do a thing in your street without paying thousands of dollars for traffic cones and a few guys in high vis to stand around staring at their phones all day. But that's, you can tell I've had a bit of practical experience there. but there is, there's also a thing in urban design called hostile architecture. And the idea is there is that you deter various activities. And we're most familiar with bench seating that has brackets on it so you can't sleep there, deterring skateboarders, that sort of thing. But you even get deterrence about sitting down in some places, which is pretty outrageous, really, when you consider that a lot of the population aren't as able as the young people putting all these rules in places. So my big problem with all of this is it's got the effect of discouraging individualism and the evolution of cities. It kind of freezes them. So I'm reading an interesting book at the moment, Designing Disorder, and it really kind of quite neatly sums up what it's doing is strategies to develop places, and I'll quote here, that nurture rather than stifle, that bring together rather than divide, and remain open to change rather than resistant to it. So I think that there are various great examples in New Zealand, and one of them was Gap Filler. So in Christchurch after the quakes, while we were all waiting around to see what would happen on all those empty sites that, you know, had car parks all over them, because it takes time to redesign and plan and all of that kind of thing and then to get things built. But this outfit down there called Gap Filler went in there and they would put a bit of gravel or some asphalt on the site, and they had things like the dance-o-mat, all sorts of really kind of interesting, quirky little things, even simple stuff like a few basketball hoops, all sorts of stuff that actually brought the community out and added a bit of spirit to the whole place. Another good example that I talked about last year is our place in Tauranga. That's gone now, but that was a big empty site next door to the Tauranga Council Building and Library, owned by the council, awaiting plans for redevelopment, etc. But some people went in there and set up a whole bunch of containers and a place called a Remaker Space, where people could learn to use tools, remake things, all of that. And in the afternoon and evening, there were little food stalls and there were venues and music playing and all of that kind of thing. Another great initiative on a site that would otherwise just be empty. And I think as we head into an uncertain future, we're going to need more of this kind of thing to happen. And in Queen Street in Auckland, I would like to see a few more structures there that would allow stalls and allow things like this to happen. And I'm thinking, you know, pop-up markets, evening markets and car parks. Those are other great examples of allowing for disorder. The other great thing about all of this is that it brings people together. I remember when we were living in Point Chev and we got our first evening market. You know, it just felt like something really quite nice and special, as opposed to trundling the other way into the supermarket and that sort of thing. Briefly heard that you may have had something about co-housing on this morning.
We did. Right? Yeah, we had a co-housing project that has just had all its final sign-off and that kind of thing. It's four houses and then a communal space. And so they're all together, six different people, or six sort of groups of people, effectively all living together. It was fascinating to talk. You know, really interesting to hear about. And it's the kind of idea that you'd think... You sort of think it would be more prevalent than perhaps it actually is.
Yeah, and that's because kind of like authorities, you know, councils and banks and lawyers who are setting up the ownership structures, even neighbours, they don't understand what's going on here. They tend to think, oh, it's a bunch of hippies or a cult or something like that moving in. But and I'm very familiar with quite a few around New Zealand, most recently Co-House near me in Auckland. And co-housing, tiny houses are other examples of housing solutions that are generated by people to solve their problems, address their needs, but not widely understood by others. So, you know, it makes it even more harder for it all to happen. And even the humble grass verge that most of us have on our streets, you know, we have to mow them. And we have on them what I call green desert, which is introduced English grass lawns. Are they good for the environment? No, they're not. Are they good for our local flora and fauna? No, they're not. But you have a try at planting something on there. I know there are arguments about traffic safety and visibility and all of that, but you try even planting some native grasses on there and see what happens to you.
What will happen?
The neighbours will bitch and moan about it and they'll phone the council and the council will come down heavy on you.
So, okay.
You know, these are all examples of where council in particular needs and neighbours need to take a slightly looser view of these sorts of things. I've got neighbours who colonise a gully behind us. They're doing God's work. They're pulling out all the weeds that the council allows to grow in there and they're putting a food garden in there on land that they don't actually own. What's the problem with that? There is no problem.
Well, yes, that's the thing, isn't it? That, you know, we sometimes create problems for ourselves that don't really exist.
Yeah. So one last thing I'd like to say on this is while it's strong on politics, this book, Designing Disorder, it's American. It doesn't actually take into account that much different cultures. And I live in Auckland. That's the biggest city in the Pacific. It's a super diverse city of over 200 cultures. And I live... you know, we live in an officially bicultural country. So I'm always saying to my students, how do I have a tangi in what you're designing here, this housing block? How do I host in my extended whānau, my extended family? If I want to work from home or start a business, how can I do that without it just being at the kitchen table? If I want to grow my own food, how can I do that? And these are things that our councils that are largely Pākehā and middle class need to think more about. And planners and urban designers, pretty much a similar bunch of people, they're not good at knowing about or allowing for either. But the key thing is we need more acceptance of this diversity from authorities, but also from neighbours as well. And of course, the bigger picture looming over us, climate change, need for our cities to become more adaptable and resilient. But by starting small, I think, and giving people and communities the ability, the flexibility to do their own thing, they'll allow us to learn what works and what doesn't without breaking anything too much and create an atmosphere where we can scale it up and start to apply it at a broader, bigger scale in the cities.
Is that something that you think there is that sort of swell of people who are wanting to pick that up and make it happen?
Yeah, I see it quite a lot. And I live in Ponsonby, which is actually, a pretty white middle-class neighbourhood. But the patch I live in, we've got Kāinga housing on either side of us. So kind of like we're in a little diverse microcosm there. But like I say, there are all sorts of things going on in there that I think we could all well be applying much more. And, of course, out the back of my place, I've got Kilmarnock Gardens, which is a big community organic garden. Terrific.
Terrific. Indeed. Thank you very much, Bill Mackay there, Senior Lecturer at the School of Architecture and Planning at the University of Auckland.